The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. I am Ben, and I'm not just welcoming you back, folks. I'm also welcoming back our super producer, Max Williams, who is on adventures, and my co-host, Mr. Noel Brown, who was also on adventures. You guys were sorely, sorely missed. Thank you so much for returning. I didn't know if you guys were just going to, like, start a new show somewhere.
Ben, we wouldn't leave you hanging like that, dude. Friends don't do that to friends.
I was totally going to do that, but I ran out of money, so I came back.
Well, you're no friend of ours, Max Williams.
Well, I leave and you get my brother to replace me?
No, he didn't. There was no replacing. He didn't fill in as producer.
Yeah.
Noel and I talked through the 12 friends that we have. And of those 12, we made a list of the five who might do our show with us, and of the two who replied, Alex was available.
That's an important qualification for a guest hosting Ridiculous History, is being someone we know and available.
Right. So it's basically like Nobel Prize standards, you know, when you think of it that way. It's prestigious is what we're saying. Both of those are prestigious institutions.
More like Ig Nobel Prize.
Yeah. Yes, which is a thing. And Noel, saved this one for you, man, because we are going to talk about something that a lot of people this time of year consider a prestigious institution all its own, the idea of the haunted house, the idea of the recreational haunted house, not Amityville style, but the one where you like pay, and it seems like they get more expensive every year here in Atlanta, but like you pay for tickets and you go to, what's the one we have, Netherworld?
Mm-hmm. Netherworld. I have a confession to make, fellas. I have never been to a haunted house because I'm scared of them.
It's okay, man. I'll go with you.
I don't like jump scares.
Yeah.
I don't like spooky stuff in the dark. Mm-hmm. I like horror movies, but I often spoil them for myself in advance of watching them, so they don't quite spook me as much. I'm a bit of a wimp, fellas. Bit of a wimp.
Nah, you just know what you like and what you don't like, you know?
That's true. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate that. Yeah. No, I'm not beating myself up. I definitely accept this by myself. But my daughter is now getting to an age where she's intrigued by the things. And I'm going to have to bite the bullet, guys, and go and get properly spooked. Because I'm not going to wait outside while my 12-year-old daughter goes in. That's just, I can't emasculate myself to that degree. No, sir. But it turns out the history of these things as attractions is very interesting and is wrapped up in the history of Halloween as we know it itself.
Yeah. Like, okay, so my objection to haunted houses recently has been entirely due to the cost But I will take a bath on that and I'll buy a ticket if you need or if you want someone to come with you and jump in front of the jump scares. Well,
as long as you'll hold my hand.
Of course. Oh, any man, excuse to hold your hand, bro.
It's very, very kind of you, Ben. But no, I love Halloween. I love the spooky season. We all do. I love the weather. I love the way it feels outside and the smells and all of the costumes and everything around it. I absolutely love it. So it's sort of shocking to me that I have this phobia. So I'm going to try to face my fears this year. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, Ben. Have you ever made good on the trick part of trick or treat?
Let's see. I think the statute of limitations has passed. So yes, to an extreme degree. You guys know I believe in justice. And I have, at times, my own interpretation of it. I'm very naturally a Halloween person. Folks, this is an audio show. You can't see it now. But over the course of the pandemic, I have acquired as a roommate a life-size skeleton, which is in the background of all our Zoom calls. But yeah, Trick or treat. This is interesting because it helps us understand that haunted houses as a recreation are a relatively recent idea. If we traveled back to, say, 1200 AD and Max, Noel, and I were trying to sell people in some village on the idea of not just going to a haunted location, but paying for the privilege, they would think we were crazy.
And yeah, they may well burn us as witches.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it didn't take much. It did not take much. But this story really starts back in the Great Depression, which still is a terrible name.
Yeah, it is. It wasn't so great. Also, Black Tuesday is the name of the day that the stock market crashed. And there was also a corresponding Black Halloween during the Great Depression. And that was the day when so much trickery was afoot that, I think people died. There were hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars of property damage. And this was a real problem in those days because there was a whole night, Mischief Night, which I believe is the night before Halloween, that was purely devoted to just pranking and, cutting up and doing all kinds of stuff. Lots of one-upsmanship that ultimately leads to, putting people in danger and some serious property damage and destruction.
Yes. Yeah. You're referring to what's also called Devil's Night. And Devil's Night has led to some serious chaos, stuff way beyond toilet paper or the throwing of eggs. We know that parents were very concerned about their kids, especially their sons, getting too wild on these days or during this time leading up to the 31st. And so they picked up a strategy to try to distract these kids. Noel, maybe we talk a little bit about the origins of the haunted house overall. Like the origins of it date back to 19th century London, the 1800s, and they were kind of a genre of a larger movement of macabre entertainment, like Madame Tussauds and so on.
Absolutely. In 1802 in London, Marie Tussaud created quite a stir with the uptight stuffed shirt British population when she displayed these wax sculptures of various decapitated French individuals. And they were so accurate because she actually created death masks from folks who were decapitated at the guillotine during the French Revolution. And she set up this exhibit in London. It became a permanent exhibit. She dubbed this attraction the Chamber of Horrors, which we know is almost like a tropey kind of name now that's been used to death, pun intended or not. I'm not even sure anymore. But yeah, it's a name that still is tied to a particular wing of that wax museum today. And oftentimes if you go to Madame Tussauds wax museums across the country or around the world, even there'll be, the celebrity part, but then there'll be a section where it's a little bit more like serial killers and, murdered people and things like that. But it wasn't until the turn of the 20th century that a kind of theater of the macabre sort of popped up in Paris, actually.
Yes, Grand Guignol. This is amazing because they were at the time notorious for onstage depictions of real body horror, real splatterpunk stuff, you might call it today. The theater's director, and this is described by Rebecca McKendry in Fangoria magazine. All horror fans will know Fangoria. The director, a guy named Max Maury, once bragged that he judged performances not so much by ticket sales as by how many people passed out from shock in the audience, or from schlock, you could say. This is a cool piece. I found out about activities like this in Interview with a Vampire, the film adaptation. You guys remember how there is this theater that is doing like a play about vampirism and the devil, but it turns out that they are actually grabbing humans and drinking their blood.
Right. Isn't that Antonio Banderas's character? Isn't that scene?
Yeah, he's in there.
It's been a while. I think that's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, they definitely had like all kinds of revolutionary kind of stage effects that they sort of created, like knives that would squirt, you know, fake blood, and like, you know, they would use like cow intestines or pig entrails to simulate, you know, humans being disemboweled. There were also some versions of it that were a little more stylized, kind of where, you know, you would slit somebody's throat and then just like red ribbons would just shoot out. And it's a really cool kind of low-tech effect that I actually still see sometimes in depictions of this kind of theater. But it was largely kind of a revolt against, like, you know, the status quo and against censorship and stuff. And it really was, at the time, some of the most kind of edgy, dangerous, you know, theater that anyone had ever seen.
Yes, and theater should be an act of revolution. That's at least that's always been my take. There's a great description of this theater from Devin Faraci over at Birth Movies Death, which is a fantastic website. And they point out something I didn't know, which is the Grand Guignol Theater is technically the home of the first scream queen, Paula Maxa. She died on stage like 30,000 times. Check out that article if you have a second. It goes in a different direction, but that's like, that's a haunted house vibe for sure, even if it was clearly a theatrical production. If you fast forward a little bit further, in 1915, there's this fairground in Liphook in England that debuted what they called a ghost house. This was one of the first, if not the first, this was one of the first kind of commercial horror attractions. They had all the stuff that, Noel, you're not particularly into with haunted houses: dim lights, shaking floors, demonic screams. Max, we get, yeah, just like that.
My blood hath curdled, y'all.
Yes.
And highly recommend A Brief History of the Haunted House by Chris Heller from Smithsonian Magazine, which is one of the sources we used for this episode. So yeah, that would have been very much one of the earliest examples of a haunted house attraction. Very, very lo-fi, but at the time would have really freaked people out. I'm sure if I had been around in this time, I would have been just as hesitant to go into these as I am to go into our more high-tech haunted houses today, which we are about to get to in the form of the early 20th century.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car, I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental
part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally. But
it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. I do also want to put in my line before we roll past this. I want to put in my line for those early haunted houses. Terror for a tuppence. I'm just going to write these mottos for institutions of yesteryear.
I love it. A tuppence. That's like a, what is that? Like a penny farthing? Like a hay penny? Some sort of negligible denomination of British currency.
Yes. But the state of Halloween, like you were saying, these things didn't exist in the U.S. They started in Western Europe first. And the idea of Halloween, like we explored years back in the origins of Halloween on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, YouTube and audio version available now, wherever you find your favorite shows. Halloween, that the way it came to the U.S. is fascinating because we've got Irish and Scottish immigrants bringing a traditional Celtic end of summer festival to this new land.
And if you want to sound smart in front of your friends, or at the very least not sound dumb, it's not pronounced Samhain. It's pronounced Samhain.
Samhain, that's
correct. When you see it printed, though, it looks like Samhain. Wasn't that the name for the traditional Celtic kind of proto-Halloween celebration?
I think Samhain is a Gaelic festival that's also the end of the harvest season, though. So it's supposed to be, I think, technically held on the 1st of November, but the party starts on October 31st. Mm-hmm. They're still very, I think, closely related in the modern secular imagination of the West. I mean, it was also, what, Halloween turned into All Saints Day or All Hallows Eve. And by the time we get to the turn of the century in the U.S., Halloween has taken the path that so many holidays take in this country. It's become an excuse to party, to break some social taboos, to get a little soused and saucy, to eat too much of something, to make mischief, to pursue mm-hmm. your vices. It was way less, you know, rambunctious, oh, these kids kind of pranks, right? We're not talking about just festooning a tree with toilet paper or, do you ever do the one, I didn't mean to be rude. I forgot to ask you. Noel, were you a trickster in your day?
No, sir. I was a good young lad.
Okay. Well, the statute of limitations is passed.
I don't believe I ever played a trick in my life. Not a day in my life. Which probably means I haven't really lived, to be honest. scared of haunted houses and a rule follower. That's me. Real stick in the mud over here. But yeah, they didn't have trick-or-treating because, as we're going to get to, trick-or-treating is a much more modern invention than I think either of us realized. But what they did have was dressing up in these horrifying costumes, frankly. If you look at the historical photos of the time, they're these like blank stare kind of like death masks that just look like they're made of burlap sacks, like something like a movie slasher would wear. They called this tradition geising, and they would wear these bizarre masks and dance and make merry, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm. And common Halloween tricks in the U.S. these days were things like taking somebody's wagon and maybe even their livestock and putting them on the roof of a barn, or tearing vegetables out of gardens, or tipping over outhouses, whether or not someone was in them. Then also allowing like livestock to escape. And this happened so often that in some regions we find October 31st was known as gate night because people would remove gates across their communities. These things were happening before the automobile became very prevalent. And when the automobile kicked in and people were able to afford to drive, the range of their trickery likewise extended. We're seeing people removing manhole covers from streets, or busting tires, or even making fake signs to confuse motorists and lead them astray. So there's a great book we should recommend by Lisa Morton. It's called Trick or Treat, A History of Halloween. It is a fantastic read. And Morton says that at first, these pranks were more or less innocent, and they often occurred in more rural communities. But then as cities got bigger, kids took the pranking into cities, and it became more and more destructive. What kind of stuff are we talking about when we say more and more destructive?
Oh, I don't know, like sawing down telephone poles and utility poles and things like that. Disassembling people's like wagons and vehicles even, and like putting them on roofs and putting them back together, which I thought was a pretty awesome one. Very, very, so much effort that goes into these. One of the scariest ones involved like placing obstructions, like really dangerous obstructions, in roadways and covering them up with leaves, which actually led to a significant traffic pileup.
Yeah, setting fires, breaking windows, splattering people with bags of flour filled with ashes.
At least it wasn't anthrax.
Yeah, it was before then. Things really hit a tipping point in 1879 when about 200 young men, boys really, in Kentucky, team up to stop a train by laying an actual dead body, an actual corpse, across the tracks. And then people start stealing bodies too.
Yeah, as med students, we know how to party. In 1900, some medical students from the University of Michigan stole a headless corpse from an anatomy lab, and they propped it up against the front door of the building. Gave people a real shock when they showed up to class. And as I was sort of hinting at earlier, things really did start to get super real in around 1902 when things just went too far, as these kinds of things tend to do. It's all about one-upsmanship and kind of trying to like outdo everybody else's pranks. And eventually you cross the line into the danger zone. There was a ton of destruction in Cook County in 1902. And the Cook County Herald had a very interesting little kind of editorial, I guess, encouraging people to defend themselves from this kind of mischief. Here's a quote. This is in Arlington Heights, Illinois, by the way. Most everybody enjoys a joke or fun to a proper degree on suitable occasions. But when property is damaged or destroyed, it is time to call a halt. We would advise the public to load their muskets or cannon with rock salt or birdshot. And when trespassers invade their premises at unseemly hours upon mischief bent, pepper them good and proper so they will be effectually cured and have no further taste for such tricks. They knew how to turn a phrase back then, newspaper folk.
Have either of you guys ever been shot with rock salt?
No, but I've seen it in movies and it looks very unpleasant. I mean, Max, how about pleasant. You?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as someone speaking from personal experience, it is not pleasant. It's still dangerous. And people did take this advice as the discourse turned toward self-defense in this regard. Some folks were taking up arms. In fact, in 1907, some kids had stretched a wire across a sidewalk to trip pedestrians in Tucson, Arizona. One guy tripped, and when he fell on the ground, he took out his firearm, a revolver, and he shot one of the pranksters dead. And then a woman in Indiana, in Logansport, was scared to death, literally. Her heart stopped after her daughter answered, on the door, and she screamed because a group of boys had a jack-o'-lantern and were just like, "Whoa!" and put it in front of her. And she, that sounds like a normal jump scare, but she must have had a pre-existing heart condition. Again, these just keep going. A guy almost loses his eyesight in 1932. A girl nearly loses her arm after being hit with stones in 39. Jeez. Yeah, there were kids in Fairfax County, Virginia in 1929 who were setting off dynamite on their school grounds. They were causing traffic accidents and stuff.
Now, not cherry bombs or like black cats, no. Dynamite.
Dynamite.
That's insane.
Like, we know miners. We're miners who know miners. We can use dynamite. And then this is where we get to the Black Halloween of 1933. Because before the Great Depression, there were a lot of people who were like, to quote Biden, they were like, this is malarkey. But the economic disaster created this period of widespread social unrest on a profound level that a lot of people hadn't experienced before. And this arguably made the kids a little bit wilder with their antics, but also the public was responding. They had it up to here with so many things by this point. And this is where we get to what you were alluding to earlier, Noel, in 1933, where people were flipping over cars, sawing down telephone poles, and just breaking stuff the way a 1980s rock band would destroy hotel rooms. And America was like, we're not your hotel room, you whippersnappers.
No, we're not. Get off our collective lawn. It's the Great Depression, so it's not like they had any money to fix this stuff. Like, what's a polite way of saying this? Taking a crap where you eat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and then not being able to clean it up. I'm sorry, that's a disgusting metaphor, but it holds. I mean, this is very short-sighted. This is literally, doing damage to infrastructure at a time where money was in absolute the shortest possible supply. So, they didn't exactly outlaw Halloween, but something had to give. But thankfully, a lot of the cities realized that prohibition doesn't really work, largely probably because of lessons learned from, that actual prohibition thing where they, wouldn't let people drink booze. And so they just, made it themselves and had illegal speakeasies and all that. This was probably right around the time that prohibition was beginning to completely unravel and it was about to be reversed. So instead of, outlawing Halloween outright, they decided that maybe we can pay these kids off, so to speak, or at least give them something else to funnel their, rambunctious energy into.
Yeah, they came up with, it's very similar to the idea of an after-school program, but for Halloween. Yeah. They said, look, we want to distract these kids. We want to give them something different and less destructive to do. Maybe we could throw a party, but they looked around and said, unless we're the 1% that has extracted all the value out of American society, we can't own, we don't have the scratch to throw a party. So we're going to have what we'll call house-to-house parties. The entire block chips in to do whatever they can. So if you're a would-be prankster, you go to the first house, you get a costume. Maybe it's some simple, usually. It's like a sheet. Boom, you're a ghost. Next house gives you some candy. That's cool. And then this sounds a lot like trick-or-treating, as Lisa Morton points out. And that's where the idea comes from. It comes from the idea of these house-to-house parties, because not only were the children given a purpose, given a series of tasks that would keep them from flipping over cars, but they were also going to be more easy to monitor because you know which houses they're going to and you know, you kind of know their route. So this is where Morton busts a myth that I think a lot of people believe in. She says, one of the most common misconceptions about Halloween is that trick-or-treating is some ancient ritual that goes back thousands of years. But, she confirms, it really is less than 100 years old. And if you, when you get to the end, right, the end of your house-to-house route, you'll see a haunted house situation set up, kind of in the basement. And this is, people are familiar with this, I'm sure. You take the kids down the stairs. It's very, very dark. And then you would play that game that some people might be familiar with, where you get a story and you're like passing around bowls of something in the dark and one of them's peeled grapes and they're like, and this was his eyes.
Ew. Oh, what's this? I think it's human brains. It's, you know, like some spaghetti or something. Right. A lot of weird uses of food. Some of this stuff sounds very unsanitary. Like apparently walls would be hung with strips of raw liver that you would like feel as you stumbled your way through the dark.
Classic Max Williams.
Classic total. Yeah, what a prankster that guy is. This raw liver, the old raw liver trick. But yeah, there'd be like weird sounds and moans and howls and screams. Yeah, exactly. A lot of very DIY solutions here. Damp sponges and hair nets.
Yeah,
apparently hanging from the ceiling. I'm picturing like, oh, get it off me. Get it. It's a gross jump damp scares. Sponge. Yeah, like definitely jump scares.
Someone's dressed as a dog and then they jump out and they're barking. This happened to me and I was so impressed. I was a kid and I was trick-or-treating one time where it looked like someone had the safe kind of like, a lot of parents don't want to go spooky, so they go with a fall theme and you got like some hay bales, some squash, some pumpkins or what have you. This one had that and it had like a scarecrow by the door and there was a little dish that said, honor system, just take one. And so it walked up and was going to take one. And then the scarecrow moved. It ran at us. It grabbed a kid and I turned around and tried to fight it. And then the guy told me to calm down. And I was
man,
you're not cool.
No touching. You know, that's the rules. I even know that. You know, having never been to a haunted house, you're definitely not supposed to touch.
But the other kids ran. The other kids ran except me. I was the only one who tried to help that other kid. Jeez.
I'm proud of you, Ben. Yeah. I'm proud of you.
Always chipping in, helping out the little guy.
Totally.
Totally. Screw that scarecrow.
He's a man of the people. Nah, man, that would have pissed me off to no end. I would have been like, nope, Halloween is canceled. I'm going home. Right. And then they would, have little lo-fi kind of effects like cats painted on cardboard outlined in glow-in-the-dark paint, which was a thing. And this also created a sense of community, right?
Yeah.
And getting to know your neighbors and all of that in the same way that that modern trick-or-treating does.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done, outfit stunner, and my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something.
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right?
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And so with this stage set, we see that the story of early haunted houses in the U.S. is a story of these small kind of nonprofit affairs. They're community based. You know, you probably later know everybody who was involved in the creation of it. And that's kind of inspiring. How did we get from there to these massive productions that cost, you know, as much as $50 a ticket in some cases? Well, it's because in part of a civic group called the Junior Chamber, also known as the JCs. I owe a lot to these folks, or my childhood does, because they're the creators of something called Trails of Terror. If you have grown up in the South, you might be familiar with something some religious organizations do called Tribulation Trail. You guys ever heard of that one?
Not that one specifically, but we're going to get to it. I have been to one of these things called Hell Houses, where they essentially used spooky Halloween tactics to, you know, teach a lesson about indoctrinate you and, you know, save your mortal soul or whatever. I also, when I think of this Trails of Terror, the closest analog that I have growing up was those things like a haunted hayride, you know,
sure,
where you'd like be in the back of a truck and going through this like hay field or whatever. And there'd be like spooky stuff popping out as you go.
Yeah, I would love to hear if other people have experienced things like Tribulation Trail. The ones I saw were very well done objectively, and you were walking through the Book of Revelations. And all the if Fine. You read the Book of Revelations, there's a lot of trippy psychedelic stuff in there, and they're very creative. I would say Grand Guignol level creative with depicting these things. And I was like, how do you get all these burning cars? How much money is this church putting into this?
Oh, that's funny you say that, Ben. The one Hell House thing that I went to had out front, just to show people where it was, a totally demolished car, presumably from a drunk driving accident. That was part of the theme of that particular Hell House.
So now organizations have stepped in, and it becomes something kind of like, it becomes a social attraction, sometimes a fundraiser, sometimes just a straight up business to make some cash for the organization. But it's still not a cultural icon. It's still kind of like how local community centers might have a pancake breakfast or something. It wasn't until the one and only Walt Disney decided to build a haunted house that it became a cultural icon. This is
Disneyland's Haunted Mansion opened in 1969, almost 20 years after inception of the idea. It took a long time. And our good friend of the show, Holly Fry, from Stuff You Missed in History Class, has single-handedly, I think, supported this institution for a number of years.
Oh, yeah. She and her husband go to Disneyland and Disney World like multiple times a year. But she is also an avid Haunted Mansion and just the whole Disney Imagineering kind of world historian. And back when I was the producer for Stuff You Missed in History Class many years ago, she interviewed the expert in the field of Imagineering, who had just come out with a book on the Haunted Mansion, because it really was kind of this flagship attraction, like you said, was, you know, 20 years in the making. And that's because it almost needed, you know, like many of the things that the Disney company did, they had to create the technology to do the things, to pull off the things that they wanted to pull off. And one of the neat tricks that they used for the Haunted Mansion was something called Pepper's Ghost, which creates these super complex illusions that almost really stand alongside something like a hologram today. It uses refracted light to project and kind of shape these images that really seem to have dimension and scale and, like, you know, float right next to you.
And that's the that's what made it so popular and so iconic. That's what differentiated it from a Tribulation Trail or a community haunted house. It's the technology. You weren't just seeing sheets hung on a tree or something painted or someone just jumping out at you going, ooh. What you were seeing instead was something that seemed to be actual shimmering figures. They spoke, they sang, they moved. Right. A witch wasn't just someone in a rubber mask. It was a body. It could be a bodiless head now floating in a crystal ball, right? That's really impressive stuff.
Super cool. And just really quickly to backtrack, I didn't mean to come off sounding as though the Disney company invented the Pepper's Ghost effect. It actually was developed in the early 1800s by John Henry Pepper, and he used it for theater. And then it was often used for, like, you know, phony seances and things like that, or, you know, theatrical productions. But of course, like everything they did, the Disney Imagineers like fine tuned it and honed the effect and used it in a way that had never been seen before. It was just absolutely stunning. And I have to say that I have been to the Haunted Mansion.
I have as well.
I like it.
So you have been to
the haunted house. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so particularly tame. Scary. Yeah.
No.
It's very, very, very tame, but super fun and really, you know, well executed. Holds up to this day.
Yeah. I have nostalgia for it for sure.
Was that Max?
We're going to count it for you, buddy. You got
it. Thanks, man.
Yeah. There you go. And so this is the real watershed moment for haunted houses as an industry in the U.S. The success of Disney's Haunted Mansion spreads across the country. Those JCs I mentioned earlier are now legit famous for their haunted houses, so much so that they eventually create their own how to do a haunted house guide for other people. There's a place called Berry Farm, Knott's Berry Farm, in California, that makes its own Halloween evening attractions, and that turns into this slate of events that goes across multiple weeks during the season.
Yeah, they call it Not Scary Farm, actually, during that time. They do it here in Atlanta at Six Flags over Georgia. Really, really fun. They have several different haunted houses, and they have this, like, you know, folks in spooky costumes kind of just roaming around the amusement park. Really, really, really fun.
Oh, Renaissance Fair has a haunted village that I'm quite excited to go to.
Is that right?
Well. Oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome. That. You still check get a out. Turkey leg is the thing. You can still get that ginormous turkey leg. Max, you get it.
Nice.
Is it a spooky turkey leg?
It is haunted. It is a haunted turkey leg.
It'll certainly haunt you later.
Did right. they die
That's
in orange?
What I'm alluding to. Yes, it's cursed. Also, we should mention, this is one of my favorites. There's a guy named Bob Burns who was working for a long, long time. He became famous in the late 60s and 70s through the 80s for these incredibly detailed recreations of horror movies as haunted houses. And that's a big draw for people to walk through. I think that one might actually maybe get to me a little bit, depending on what I was walking through. You can see a full list of everything he did. Probably one of the most prominent ones is the Alien recreation he did in 1979. I'm not sure. To each your own, but it's really impressive, you know?
Yeah, he did one of John Carpenter's The Thing. Lots of classic, like, 1960s horror movies, like Frankenstein's Lab, The Forbidden Planet.
Creature from the
War. Exactly, War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. That would have been super cool to check out. In the L.A. area, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and then we saw... You'll see that a person named Itzy Atkins claims that they're one of the first to open a professional interactive haunted house business, which is called Blood Manor, over in Maryland in 71. But you know who wasn't a huge fan of this? Evangelical Christians, who believed that this was spreading, it was popularizing unholy things. And that's where we get the Hell Houses, 1972, Jerry Falwell and Liberty University. And then haunted house industries are also beginning to move in step with Hollywood's horror industry.
Yeah, they're a little corny, but I quite like them. The Netflix, the movies that made us, I think is what it's called. There's a new series of that just came out that's, I think, 90% horror movies. It does Halloween, it does Friday the 13th, and it does Nightmare on Elm Street. And I didn't quite realize that, like, New Line Cinema was like a super fledgling kind of indie, you know, film studio. And the guy who was the main backer, I forget his name now, but they talk about this in the little series. He staked everything on Nightmare on Elm Street being a big hit. And of course it was. And, you know, films like that and Halloween, which is also a very low budget kind of indie that just, you know, was distributed independently, really got Hollywood to, like, embrace, you know, horror. And there's this, like, kind of 80s slasher horror boom that created this, you know, super high demand for, you know, the most splattery haunted houses that you could imagine, which people are trying to one-up each other with, like, how much they could handle, or, like, how extreme can we get with our haunted house?
Right.
That is, in many ways, gone too far to this day. If you know about, we've talked about places like McCamey Manor, where you have to sign a waiver. Mm-hmm. And they can definitely touch you. They, like, put you in a coffin. And
not a haunted house.
It's a freaking sadist house.
I talked about this on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. I'm fairly confident that they're making their money through illegal gambling and having
web streams.
People in Vegas, bet on it. But what McCamey is doing is a crime.
I completely agree, but it's not if people sign the waivers, I suppose. There's even ones that, like, you know, you pay to have someone kidnap you, even abduct you, and then take you to one of these situations where they, like, you know, mercilessly psychologically torture you for hours and hours and hours. But that's really not what we're talking about. You're right. That's something different. It's just kind of course, everything tends to end up in the most extreme place eventually. But we've got Larry Kirshner, the president of the Haunted House Association, because that became a thing, saying that if you went to a haunted house in the 1980s and 90s, you would have seen a lot of Freddy Krueger, Jason, Pinhead. The haunted house industry really followed the movie industry at that time, which makes sense.
Yeah. And now we see that the for-profit haunted houses are quickly outpacing the work of nonprofit groups like the Junior Chamber JCs. However, this was not all a story of a rise to fame and prominence, because haunted houses had some problems. In New Jersey, a haunted house caught fire, trapping and killing 8 teenagers within. And so a lot of these attractions got shut down as a result. Politicians were saying, hey, if we don't ban these things, let's at least get some stronger safety rules here. Volunteer organizations couldn't deal with the tougher safety rules. So they got forced out of business. And then going back to what Larry Kirshner was saying, the JCs, the reason you don't see a bunch of their haunted houses around today is because they were fairly basic. It was based on the idea that people would volunteer. But then when you have other folks running it as a business, tons and tons of advertising, it's hard to, you know, keep your slice of the pie, because the whole pie plate is getting more expensive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of these have production level, you know, on par with, you know, what you see in TV and film. But today there is kind of a cool little, you know, cottage industry around haunted houses. The number of professional haunted houses over the preceding decades absolutely exploded. And according to our guy Kirshner, around 2,700 haunted houses operated across the nation in, I believe, 2013. So I can only imagine that's grown from there. Though I would be interested to see how the pandemic affected haunted houses, because it is obviously very close quarters. Certainly some folks might be a little germophobic about them. And I'm sure that, you know, masks would be required now in places
like
that.
They may already feel, a lot of folks already feel like they've lived through a haunted house. So
no
question about
it.
More of the same at this point. Like, so you see them expanding now past the typical house. There's a really cool one south of Atlanta, which is set in this, it's outdoors in like this paintball arena kind of thing. And I have a friend who runs that, and I like going to check that one out. For some reason, I'm more comfortable with the ones outside. And maybe that's pre-pandemic, but I think that's gonna be a trend we see as well. There's the ones, you know, like I mentioned earlier, with religious groups who want to find a new creative way to spread their message. There are even like PSA houses now, haunted trap houses we saw reports of, and they warn you about the horrors of real life things like opioid addiction. It's funny because the guy in charge of that trade group we mentioned earlier, Kirshner, he himself doubts that the haunted house is going to be around forever. He says every business will eventually fail, so we just want to last as long as we possibly can. And this is where the Smithsonian writer that we mentioned earlier has this wonderful line that I quite love. They say, a Halloween without haunted houses? Now that's a scary thought.
That's journalism right there. Man, this guy Kirshner is a real bummer, though. He literally says every business will eventually fail. So we just want to last as long as we possibly can. All right, man. I guess that's a pragmatic way of looking at it, but kind of a downer. But yeah, just like in the Great Depression, though, we still have these neighborhood, you know, bowl of grapes in the dark kind of situations, which is super cool. It's a great, and honestly, I've certainly seen much more elaborate ones too, where folks will band together and like build something out, like in a big garage, or do something maybe involving multiple homes that are next to each other, like combining the use of different yards and things like
that. And folks, we know this was a bit of a long one, but we hope you enjoyed going on this journey with us, because 'tis the season, as they say. I had such a blast with this one.
Oh man,
so glad you guys are back in this haunted house of ridiculous histories.
I'm glad to be back, man.
And thanks, as always, of course, to our pantheon of fantastic podcast spooksters. We're talking about Gabe Lousier. We're talking about the one and only Max Williams. We're talking about Alex Williams, who composed our soundtrack. We might even, you know what? It just occurred to me. I bet you, Noel, I bet you that Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister, has not only been to a lot of haunted houses, but I bet you he's performed in some.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt. And he's definitely the type of guy that would grab you by the shin, you know, get a swift kick in the bald head for me, my friend.
Boy.
Think about the voice he would use.
Transatlantic.
Yep, transatlantic. And the sinister Quister laugh would play pretty well in the dark.
I just picture him going.
I would walk in the opposite direction.
I just picture him going, the children of the night. Oh, how they scream for me. I want to suck your blood.
Ah, see?
Yeah. Oh, man, we love you, Jonathan, if you're hearing this. So,
but hey, while you're on the internet, which you presumably are, why not check us out on Facebook, where we have a Facebook group. Did you hear that Facebook is rebranding because they've been taking so much heat lately? Mm-hmm. What do you think it's going to be?
I don't think it's going to solve the problems that created.
It's literally like a Band-Aid, where it's like, hey, how about instead of like addressing, you know, our role in like, you know, all this proliferation of fake news and all of good stuff, that we'll just change our name. Yeah,
well, they're like doing a great move. I mean, Facebook, and you could argue social media in general, is itself a kind of haunted house in function. So they'll probably name it what they call a metaverse, or it'll refer to that somehow. That's what they're really trying to build right now.
And I saw he's been pushing that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a neat idea, but it would be a neat idea in the right hands is the most diplomatic thing I could say.
In the meantime, our little sliver of Facebook is perfectly pleasant. Yes. Not controversy at all. Barely any fake news. It's all just a bunch of cool history nerds sharing memes and having a good old time. So pop on over to Ridiculous Historians on Facebook if you want to be a part of that.
You can also follow us not just as a show, but as individuals. Find me on Twitter, where I am at BenBullenHSW. Find me on Instagram, where I have, in a burst of creativity, named myself at BenBullen, B-O-W-L-I-N.
Catch me exclusively on Instagram, where I am at HowNowNoelBrown. I think that does it. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.